الحمد لله وكفى والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم One of the very broad principles of our deen is that if an individual wants to avoid sin, the way by which they avoid sin is to avoid the environment of sin. So obviously, I mean, if we take a step back, obviously one of the major goals of every Muslim is to avoid sin. And we should understand that when we seek to avoid sin, we aren't necessarily capable of avoiding sin. We are more capable of avoiding the environment of sin. So what do I mean by that? Let's say that a person finds a weakness within themselves. And I'll just give you an example, a silly example. They find that they eat too many chocolate chip cookies every day. Okay? So if a person wants to avoid eating chocolate chip cookies, the only way to avoid that would be to get rid of the chocolate chip cookies completely. You cannot have a bunch of chocolate chip cookies in the cupboard and say, I'm going to exhibit my strength and I'm going to avoid the chocolate chip cookies. Or you cannot go to a place where they bake chocolate chip cookies and say, but I'm not going to have any. The way that a person avoids chocolate chip cookies is to avoid the environment of chocolate chip cookies, to avoid ever even seeing, if possible, a chocolate chip cookie, so that it's completely out of sight, which makes it out of mind. Now, obviously, chocolate chip cookie is a silly example, although, I don't know, maybe some people are struggling with chocolate chip cookies. But everyone can apply their own example in this blank of chocolate chip cookie. If it's misuse of the tongue, then a person should avoid those environments in which they find themselves speaking too much or speaking about things that they shouldn't be speaking about. If it's misuse of the eyes, then people should identify what causes the misuse of the eye and eliminate that from the person's routine. So, as an example, if a person finds that they're misusing their eyes, there's always a circumstance that leads to that, whether that's having a cell phone, having a connection to the internet, being on a computer alone, etc., etc., etc. Every sin begins with a sequence. Nobody just jumps into a sin and gets to the nth degree. Every sin begins with a sequence. As I've mentioned before, our scholars, they say that sin is a fire, and every fire begins with a spark. So we should identify what is causing the sparks, we should identify the environment, and we should avoid that environment. And actually, that's the name of deen. You know, if somebody said to me, give me one piece of advice, one thing I have to do, I'm a Muslim, somebody who's a Muslim who performs the five faraid in a day. If a person came to me and said, give me just one single piece of advice, the piece of advice would be avoid sin. Because deen in and of itself is complete. If a person prays five times a day, fasts in the month of Ramadan, pays zakah on their wealth, performs the hajj when it's mandatory, they perform the very basics of deen, they will be successful. That person will be successful. For sure that person will be successful. That person can go to Jannah with those deeds. The problem is that along with doing those deeds, we perform sins. And that nullifies the effects of our good deeds and creates many problems for us in this life and will create many problems, many headaches for us in the hereafter. One time the Prophet ﷺ asked the Sahaba, who are the bankrupt ones? So they answered obviously what was most apparent, that the bankrupt ones are the ones who engage in the market, and when they get to the market, they're exchanging and they lose their money. So the Prophet ﷺ said, no, that's not the bankrupt one. The bankrupt one is the one who comes with deeds. They come with deeds on the day of judgment, but the problem is that when they get there, they performed this wrong against this person, that wrong against that person, said this about this person. So each of those people comes and takes that person's good deeds on the day of judgment in exchange for all of the sins that they created. And then in the end, when there's no more good deeds, they start taking their sins and dumping it on that person. So now the person started with a positive balance, but eventually ends up in a negative balance. So we have to be very particular about sin. That's the key thing. I mean, the basics of deen, praying, you know, saying the shahada, praying, fasting in the month of Ramadan, spending time with good company, these are all things that we all do. It's sin that's the actual problem. You know, similarly, we could say, like, if I said to you, the goal in life is to fill up a bathtub. And you can turn the water on, and there's a drain in the bottom. Now, if a person turns the water on and leaves the drain open, the bathtub is not going to fill. Why? Because everything coming in the drain, everything coming out the spout is going down the drain. But if a person plugs the drain, it's easy to fill a bathtub. You don't need much water. There's a similar example of a Muslim. You don't need a lot of water. We need to plug the drain. And plugging the drain means that we avoid sin. So for us, once a person takes Islam and they begin to perform the basics of the deen and they get their simple routine in place, the challenge then befalls them to avoid sin, not to do many good deeds. Good deeds will come naturally if a person leaves sin, but it's to avoid sin so that the good deeds that they're doing can accumulate and provide them with value in this life and the next. So for us to think about how we can avoid sin is one of the most essential discussions that we can have. Now, now we get to this point that I introduced in the beginning, which is what is the major mechanism to avoid sin? The major mechanism to avoid sin is not to say, I'm tough, I'm strong, I'm going to avoid this sin, I've made a decision. Yes, I mean, we make a decision to avoid sin, but the way by which we avoid sin is to avoid the environment of sin. If we avoid the environment of sin, then the sin will naturally disappear. This example is from the beginning of time, from the beginning of creation of human beings. Obviously, time began before that. From the beginning of the creation of the human beings. When Adam alayhi salam and Hawa alayhi salam were in Jannah, and the challenge was placed upon them to not eat from the tree, the command that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave them was, don't approach the tree. وَلَا تَقْرَبَا هَذِهِ الشَّجَرَةِ And do not approach this tree. Now look, it's very interesting. The command wasn't don't partake of the tree. The command was don't even go near the tree. Because if you avoid going near the tree, you don't have to worry about the tree. But once you get near the tree, then the challenges of the tree are going to be very difficult to avoid because shaitan knows how to play the game and how to cause people to slip. So when we're trying to avoid sin, we identify the sin, and then we say to ourselves, how can I best avoid the environment of this sin? Because if I avoid the environment, I'm safe. And if I don't avoid the environment, I'm in trouble. And that's the effort that people have to make. That's the effort that all of us have to make. By the way, you know the very famous example, which I think I shared this, I don't remember when, recently, the famous example that everybody is aware of this man who killed 99 people and then wanted to seek forgiveness, and then he approached a scholar and asked if there was an opportunity for him to be forgiven. So the scholar said, you killed 99 people, there's no way you could be forgiven. So he killed that scholar as well. So when he killed that 100th person, he again felt remorse. He went, he found another pious person, he asked him, You know, is there forgiveness for me? The person said, of course there's forgiveness for you. At any time you can seek tawbah from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even though you killed 100 people. However, you must leave the city in which you are. And you must go to another city. And what was the description of the other city? There's good people living there. You're in a bad environment. If you are sincere about avoiding murdering people, then you must leave the city in which you're in, and you must head to this other city where there are good people, where there is good company. So then he began to make the journey. He dies a little bit past the halfway mark. The angels begin to fight with one another about who's going to take this body, and eventually they measure and they find that he's one footstep or one span beyond the halfway point. So because he was making an effort to head towards the city of goodness, he was leaving the environment of his sin. Therefore, the angels proclaimed him eventually to be one of the people of Jannah, and he was admitted to Jannah. So what does that show us? The same detail, which is that if that person could have just made tawbah right there, he would have been done. Why does he have to travel and leave the city? Why are the angels measuring the distance? Because the issue with sin is not to just say it's wrong, I make tawbah. The issue with avoiding sin is to say, I need to make this change so it doesn't happen again tomorrow. So that's the ultimate challenge, to say, this is the sin that I'm involved in. So that's one, right? To appreciate the sin, to recognize the sin, to feel ashamed of the sin, to want to change the sin. But then the greater challenge, the key challenge after that, once Allah opens one's eyes, is to say, now that I'm going to make an effort on this sin, the thing that I need to do is I need to avoid the environment of this sin. Okay, so that's old stuff. That's things that we've talked about many times before, and I'm just sort of rehashing this to set the stage. What I want to say is that now the next point that I want to add to this, which we haven't discussed before, is that one of the very important benefits of leaving the environment of sin is that it then allows you to expand into something good. Okay, and I've said this many times before, but I just want to say it in a different way today. So look, there's two benefits to avoiding the environment of sin. The first benefit is that when a person leaves the environment of sin, the probability of them performing that sin becomes much less. And the way by which they can avoid that sin, again, is to avoid the environment of sin. So it decreases the opportunity for shaitan. But the second thing that arises is that it opens the door to doing good. It opens the energy and the door to doing good. Now, how's that? Because when a person doesn't have to battle their environment, they can channel that energy to something positive. Listen very carefully, because it's a little scientific. When a person doesn't have to battle the environment, that opens up energy, which allows them to take that energy and channel it to something good. That's why there's a general principle of our deen that create a vacuum. Well, no, that there's no such thing as a vacuum spiritually. You know what we mean by this? Like, you know what a vacuum is? A vacuum is an empty space, right? So for example, if I go like this and I wave, you can't see, right? But let's say there was smoke in the air and I go like this and I push the smoke away. The air doesn't just empty. The space doesn't empty. It fills with more air because there's no vacuum. Spiritually, there's no such thing as a vacuum. What that means is that if you take something and remove it, you open the space for something good to fill it. Okay? So when a person removes themselves from an environment of sin, the next natural consequence of that is that the energy that they were using to fight the sin in the environment becomes free and can be used for something better. Does that make sense? And that's a principle of our deen as well. That's why Mashayikh always emphasized the battling of sin and the environment of sin. Because if the environment of sin is gone, then the person's tahajjud, Quran, good manners, good etiquette, all that naturally fills in the void of the battle against sin. Now, it's interesting that that's things that we've established spiritually for 1,400 years. Our Mashayikh have been talking about this. And now today, psychologists have started discussing this as well. And actually, it's a little old. It was an old experiment, but it keeps coming up over and over again when you study this topic. Like 1997, roughly. So I'm just going to share the first experiment. 1997, Case Western. You can look it up if you want to read any science. 1997, Case Western University, Department of Psychology, they did this very interesting study to show this principle. I mean, they obviously weren't looking at it from this perspective, but it basically highlights the same principle. So essentially what they did was they wanted to show that if somebody has to fight their ego, when they're fighting their ego, it weakens them to do other tasks. Does it make sense, what I'm trying to say? Okay, and they made a very simple experiment. It's actually ingenious the way they make these experiments, but it's a very good experiment. It's well designed. So what they did was they took, like, I think in this study, maybe 67 volunteers. Don't quote me the exact number. It's a while since I've read the details, but just roughly 100. Let's make it 100. 67 volunteers, okay? Close to 100. And what they did was they basically said to them that we are going to, they didn't tell them what the study was. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of how they went about this, so let's put that away for a minute. But basically they said to them, you have to come hungry. You have to come to this testing lab hungry. They didn't tell them it was a lab. They said that we're having this kind of taste test, this and that. You have to come hungry. And you have to not have eaten lunch. So it was, let's say it was 4 o'clock. Come, but don't eat lunch because we're going to give you foods to taste. So when the people got there, they were hungry. Then they basically said to them, they created three groups, two or three or four groups, something like this. One group, they said, we have chocolate chip cookies and we have radishes. And we need to test your taste buds to see how they react to one or the other. Okay? And what they did before anybody came in, they baked the cookies on site. So the smell of the cookies and the freshly baked cookies was everywhere in the room. Okay? So now you've got hungry people who obviously prefer chocolate chip cookies over radishes, right? And the smell of chocolate chip cookies is all over the place. I mean, they're in the waiting room, you know, to come in for their turn. They're smelling these cookies everywhere, okay? So they put the plates in front of them. They say, okay, group one, here's chocolate chip cookies and radishes. We need you to taste the radishes but cannot touch the chocolate chip cookies, okay? And then we need you to, you know, let's say taste the radishes, and then we need you to wait some time, and then we need your palate to reset, and then we need you to taste the radishes again. And then you're going to leave the room. Then to the second group, they said, you can eat whatever you want. You like the chocolate chip cookies, you like the radishes, take whatever you want. Okay? So essentially what's going on? One group has to fight their nuffs, in my words, right? Not in their words. One group has to fight their nuffs because they totally set up this, like, you're hungry, chocolate chip cookies, look at the smell, I'm dying for chocolate chip cookies. It's bringing back the memories of when I was a kid, you know. They really, really got their nuffs going. And then they said, you cannot have the chocolate chip cookies. And the other group, they said, you can eat whatever you want. Now, they gave them, like, the first batch of the radishes or chocolate chip cookies. They made them wait a certain period of time. Then they let them eat again. Then they basically told them that you have to come back and do this one more time, but while you're away, you cannot eat any chocolate. If you're in the radish group, you can't eat any chocolate, okay? So basically, they made them fight their nuffs for about 24 hours, and they really got them. You know, they revved them up. They put these fresh cookies in front of them. Then they brought them in again the next day, and they said to them, here is a test that you have to take. And what it was a very challenging, mind-boggling type test. Actually, the questions that they designed were impossible to solve, but they didn't tell the subjects that the test was impossible. They made it seem that you could get to a certain point, but in the end, you could never solve it. So they said, group one, you solve the test. Group two, you solve the test. And really what the idea was for the scientists, they were watching from behind a one-way mirror. What the idea was for the scientists was they wanted to see how fast the groups quit. Right? Because they're not solvable, the test. They can get to a certain point, but you can't eventually solve it. So they want to see who gives up first. And actually, I'm simplifying the experiment. There were four groups. There was a control group, another group, a cookies-only group, a radish-only group, a you-can-choose-what-you-want group, and a cookie group, right? A radish group. So anyway, you get the idea. So there's these four groups, and they test them in this way. So in the end, what they found was that the group that had to fight their nuffs could not do that test very easily. They were the first group to give up. You know, let's say you put the test in front of them, within 15 minutes, they gave up. The other groups lasted 45 minutes, hour, 45 minutes, 45 minutes, hour, something like that. But the group that had to fight their nafs lasted a very short period of time. So from that, they deduced that because we made these people fight their desires, they used so much energy in fighting their desires that when it came time for them to do something different than fighting their desires, they had very little energy left. They were very quick to quit whatever task you gave them, right? Whereas the other group, you know, they didn't have to fight their nafs. They were much more likely to continue with the test even though it was not solvable. Now, in this experiment is not exactly deen, right? Because in deen, we have halal and haram. So we can't decide when we want to eat the cookies or when we want to eat the radishes. We're assigned what we have to do for our own benefit, by the way. But what it shows us is that human beings have only a certain amount of energy in them. And if that energy is burned trying to resist the sin or fighting with the sin, fighting with the sin, fighting with the sin, and eventually falling into the sin, then there's not much energy left to do anything else. So from this, they deduced that, this was a psychological study. So what their ultimate conclusion, which anyway is useful for everybody in this room also, is that if a person wants to succeed in something, they should remove all the distractions completely from their lives. So much so that people who read this study, eventually they came to the conclusion, one of the main people who's quoting this study, he came to the conclusion that for example, the TV needs to be out of the house. It's not enough to say we're not going to watch the TV. It's not enough to wrap up the TV and put it away. The TV needs to go completely out of the house. Because if the TV's on the wall and you're battling the TV every day and saying, I'm not going to watch this, I'm not going to watch this, I'm not going to watch this, the energy spent in battling the TV is that much energy that's not going to be present for a person to do their homework, study for a test, do well on an exam, do some other good deed. So the idea was that if somebody wants to achieve heights in anything, they should remove everything that's a distraction so they're not battling those things. You understand what I'm saying? So it's basically, this is our principle of deen. They're just saying it another way. I mean, they're worried about how they can achieve something in dunya. We're worried about how we can achieve deen in dunya, how we can achieve our deen in this dunya and its rewards in the hereafter. So what this means is that we need to identify everything that doesn't mean anything to us. And by eliminating the things that don't mean anything to us, the energy will naturally lead to goodness. Otherwise stated, min husni Islam al-mar'i tarkuhu ma la ya'ni. From the beauty of the Islam of an individual is his leaving that which doesn't concern him. This is that same vacuum principle. If we want to succeed, the name of deen is not to say, I'm going to rack up all these good deeds. The name of deen is to say, I'm going to close all these doors to sin. When a person closes all these doors to sin, the goodness of deen will naturally grow in that space. Tahajjud will come by itself. Sunnah will begin to fill in the space. The beauty of deen, husni Islam al-mar'i, will show up by itself. That's the statement of the Prophet ﷺ. What he said in one sentence, science can be studying till the end of time. That's the beauty of the hadith. You know, these such powerful few words has such depth of meaning. So we as people who are trying to achieve excellence, basically it's a discussion of excellence, right? We as people who are trying to achieve excellence, we want to become hafiz of Quran and excellent in our jobs, excellent in our responsibilities, excellent in our relationships, excellent in our ibadah, you know, before our Lord. We have so many spheres of excellence that we're trying to conquer. But the way by which we succeed in that excellence means that we have to remove the garbage. We have to remove the things of temptation. We have to remove the things that are distracting us. And we can't remove them by just saying, okay, I took it out of my pocket, I left it on my nightstand. It's not like that. We have to say, is this thing giving me value? What type of value am I getting out of it? And then we just basically cut it completely from our lives. You know, I mean, just as an example, you know, there's no wahi coming down on a cell phone. There's nothing in a cell phone that a person can't live without. And there's so much fitna that arises on a cell phone. You know, whether it be the speaking about things we shouldn't speak about, reacting at times we shouldn't react. And we're not people who react, we act. You know, if somebody says something, we don't just automatically quickly text back as fast as we can. We always want time to digest it, you know, take a deep breath, think twice before we say what we say, because we know that our words can be very damaging to us and to others. And we as human beings, we don't know, we don't have the discipline to use our words wisely unless we have the time to reflect and think about them. So whatever we find in our lives that's potentially a distraction, we should remove it. I've shared this story before, and I think we shared it in the Etiquettes of Knowledge retreat as well. You know, one of our famous scholars, and again, because I didn't review this that in depth, I don't want to quote any names or anything, but one of our famous scholars, one of the habits that he had when he was a student was that he would take all, he would just, at the beginning of the school year, he would take this box. And every day when mail would come, he would take the physical mail and throw it in the box. And he would just do this the whole school year. At the end of the school year, he would open up the box and read all the letters that he received. And two points that he came to. Number one, the vast majority of problems that were present in the letters that he received all resolved themselves. They didn't even need him to be involved. It just got better by itself. There was no need to get, you know, freak out and react. That was the first thing. The second thing is that the few things that needed attention were things that he could attend to at that time anyway. And the third thing is that it allowed him to maintain focus on his studies and not be distracted by the everyday ups and downs of life. And that's very important. Now, people say, oh, I can do that. I'll take all my junk mail and throw it in a box. But this was not the, you know, 2020. This was not 2020. This was like the early 1900s, early, you know, 100 years ago. 100 years ago, mail was like the internet. That's how everybody communicated. So maybe we take our phones and our email. Now, if you wanted to replicate that experiment today, then it would be don't answer your email for a year. You know, you're a high school student or you're a college student and a college starts, I'm not answering email until my college term is over, right? That would be the example. And who's going to be able to do that? You know, very few people, or now maybe I could say email, you say that's like a dinosaur, text, whatever you want to call it, right? It's the same story. There's so much distraction. And you know, the people of excellence are few. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just the reality of the world. From any time and any place, the people of excellence are few. The population as a whole is not achieving excellence. There's about 5% of the population that thrives for excellence. The rest just go along for the ride. So if we want to be people of excellence, we need to exhibit ourselves in the spheres of excellence, which means we can't get bogged down by everybody's day-to-day garbage. You know, I mean, you could turn on the news, and you could turn on the news the next day, and you can turn on the news the next day. The amount of energy that's spent, psychological and spiritual energy that's spent digesting the news, completely paralyzes us. Completely paralyzes us, spiritually, physically, psychologically. And now scientists are saying, you know, you should do a news fast. They should do psalm. You should do psalm. They call it psalm. News fast. This is what we have to do. I mean, we don't know that. We think that we just watch something randomly on CNN or read some news article randomly, and all of a sudden it has no effect on us. Are you kidding me? It has major effects on us. It has major effects on us. It paralyzes us. You think that we can watch death and destruction and dying and oppression, and that doesn't have an effect on a human being? But that's all the news is. And by the way, the news is just, I mean, I know that they like to elevate the news and call it some sort of high calling. But in the end, it's all driven by money. Everybody has to sensationalize everything because people aren't going to turn to your channel. And you're judged by how many people watch your channel. I mean, CNN anchors, they can claim to be like some high people who are, you know, just basically there to spread the news. But don't tell me that they're not, there's no secondary motive there. 100% there's a secondary motive there. The secondary motive is there's 20,000 people watching my channel. There's 40,000 people watching that channel. That channel has a lot of sensationalism. I need to sensationalize what I'm saying so I keep my viewers and bring more. And now with this 24-hour news cycle, it means that the only people who get on the news are the ones that can say the most extreme and the most crazy things. And everybody has to go around go along for the ride. And don't think for a second that doesn't affect us. It brings everybody down. It brings everybody down to the lowest level possible. It completely removes excellence. It completely removes excellence. People who want to achieve excellence have to hide from everything around them, create a bubble, and focus on that excellence. And everyone who achieves excellence knows this. Scientists, I mean, it was very interesting. I have this one person I work with. He's one of the top pathologists in the world. Top pathologists in the world. He looks, I mean, people send him slides from all over to make diagnoses. So one day, I remember vividly, one day he said to me, what did you do last night? He asked me, what did you do last night? So I said, well, you know, I did this and this and this, and I put my kids to bed. He said, oh, what time do your kids go to bed? So I said, oh, you know, it was about 9 o'clock. He said, well, how do they go to bed? I said, I read them a story. He said, what story did you read them? I said, Winnie the Pooh. He said, Winnie the what? I said, Winnie the Pooh. I said, you haven't heard of it? He said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I couldn't believe it. I looked at him. I said, you don't know who Winnie the Pooh is? And he said, no, I don't know. I mean, because he's like so excellent that he's not caught up in like what's going on everybody's day-to-day issues. He's just in his own world. And I've spent a lot of time with a lot of excellent people in a lot of different spheres, and they all tend to be the same way. They're very particular about what they let in their space, particularly people of Deen. The people of excellence in Deen, they don't even know. They're just completely in a cave. You know, like the Prophet said that there'll be a time when you have to physically go in a cave. They're in a spiritual cave. They don't know, like, what's this and what's that and what's the latest this and what's the latest that. And honestly, it doesn't even matter. Yesterday, you knew that this was a big thing. Tomorrow, it's that. None of it matters. When you were 10, it was something. When you were 20, it was something. When you were 30, it was something. When you were 40, it was something. It all passes. None of it added anything to who you are today. That's the reality. That's the reality of the world in which we live. But, you know, the deception is that everything seems to glow and glitter. It's so glamorous. It seems to be worthy of our time. It's not. It's not. And the fool is the one who doesn't think, you know, go back and say, what happened? I mean, pick the last 5 years. Ask ourselves, you know, the news events of the last, forget about 5 years. Just take the last 10 years. From 2000 to 2015, somebody stand up. 2000 to 2015, tell me what happened. What were the big events? Very few people, you might be able to say 5, 6 things. Yet the person watched the news every day for 2 hours. Now he's going to tell me 5, 6 things that he gained from 2 hours of news. Is there someone outside? Can you see why are all those emergency lights on outside? I don't know. Maybe Mustafa, can you just go? I have sub, just check what's going on. So anyway, I mean, this is the reality of our existence, and we need to wake up to this. This is the world in which we live. If we want to achieve excellence in our deen and our dunya, then we choose what comes in our space. We choose what we let come into this heart. We choose what we're going to let enter into this mind. That's basically deen. Everything else is downhill. The spiritual ramifications of the shahada by itself honestly are sufficient for us. And the 5 basic daily prayers, etc., that's all sufficient for us. The challenge does not lie in trying to mix oil with water. That, like, I'm totally embedded in the dunya with all the garbage and the distractions, and now let me add Quran and tahajjud and this and that and see how I can mix these things. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Instead, we should remove the garbage. Remove the things that are la ya'ni, the things that don't concern us. And then see what we can add. Now you have an empty space. In that empty space, it'll be very easy to add the good things that you find in hadith or in our kabbalin, etc. All of the things that we should be doing. So the challenge doesn't lie in good deeds. Good deeds are desirable, but the challenge lies in avoiding sin and cutting ourselves off from the things that have no relevance to us. The irrelevant. Doing hijab. Essentially, I mean, like, if I could, you know, sometimes I could say, like, I could summarize the whole deen in one word, hijab. Doing hijab from the things that don't concern us. That's basically the summary of what we need to recognize. And otherwise, we burn a lot of energy. And that energy completely takes our abilities away from focusing on the things that matter. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make us amongst those who are able to avoid the environment of sin And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us the wisdom to be able to selectively induce in our own environments that which is beneficial for us. And may He protect us from the constant battle of the nafs that takes us away from doing the good that we're able to do. Wa akhiru ta'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Salawat.